big filter.
They just image of the president. You know,
I'd like to bring the House Committee on Consumer Protection and Government Accountability to order, please. Today, February 18th, committee, we have two bills up before us today. And we're going to start out with Senate Bill 1025A. So I'd like to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 1025A. Thank you. Patrick, would you give us a brief summary of the bill before us?
Glad to, Mr. Chair.
And then we'll call up the senators that would like to testify on it.
Thank you. Senate Bill 1025A directs the Building Code Structures Board and the Residential Manufactured Structures Board to adopt radon mitigation standards for new public buildings and certain new residential buildings by January 1st, 2011. It directs the Department of Consumer and Business Services to make standards applicable to new residential building permits on April 1st, 2011, and for new public building permits on April 1st, 2013. The bill directs the real estate agency to develop information concerning radon in one- and two-family dwellings and to make the information available to potential buyers of such dwellings by January 1st, 2011. And to accommodate that, the measure has an emergency clause and would take effect upon passage and signature by the governor. The impact statements for this were received before consideration by the Senate are no revenue impact and a minimal fiscal impact, and the Senate vote, Senate floor vote, was 24-6, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And up first, if you would identify yourself for the record, please.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for hearing this bill today. I'm Senator Jackie Dingfelder, representing portions of Northeast and Southeast Portland, Senate District 23, and I'm here with my colleague, Senator Montes Anderson. Really appreciate this hearing. And the bill before you deals with reducing exposure to radon gas. Radon gas, many of you probably know, is a known carcinogen, and it is produced during the natural breakdown of uranium, which is an element found in most soils and waters. However, radon is colorless, odorless, and tasteless, and specific equipment and methods need to be used to detect it. So you're probably aware that radon can seep into buildings through holes or cracks in the foundation, and as radon accumulates, we can frequently see elevated radon levels. I will share with you my personal story here in a minute because we found it in our home and you know, did decide to mitigate for it. But the other thing is as we are increasing our energy efficiency of our buildings and making our buildings tighter, so to speak, that also unfortunately makes it harder for the radon to escape. And so we want to our homes to be energy efficient, but we also want them to be safe and free of radon as much as possible. So an elevated radon level is a problem because, as mentioned, radon gas is a known carcinogen. It's the second leading cause of lung cancer in the United States. It's the first leading cause of lung cancer among non-smokers. And you will see in your materials that it is an estimated number of about 15 to 22,000 people die each year in the U.S. from radon-related lung cancer. And you're going to hear a direct story today from some of the other witnesses. So radon's a problem, but what can we do about it? I worked with several groups during the interim to bring this bill before you, including the Home Builders Association, the Realtors Association, the Lung Association, and the State Building Codes Division. We have created a bill which we think is a good bill, has no opposition, and will reduce exposure to radon, which, of course, is what we're most interested in, is protecting Oregonians. The first part of the bill, and hopefully you have it all in front of you, will ensure that radon-resistant construction standards are included in Oregon's building codes. I worked with the Building Codes Division to try and make this as seamless as possible, and in the bill you'll see that the various boards within building codes will incorporate radon-resistant standards into their already scheduled review of residential codes. So we didn't want to create a new schedule for them, make sure that it's incorporated within their upcoming schedules. The second part of the bill will make it easier for prospective home buyers to obtain information about radon. Worked very closely with the Realtors Association and with Mr. Gene Bentley, who's the real estate commissioner. We had a letter from him saying that they were fine and supported the bill. And we had agreed to put radon information instead of having it in a whole new requirement. I found out that the Realtors Association, they have what's called a home buyer's guide, and I'm sure Sean's probably back there and going to make sure that I get the right terminology. So we wanted to make sure it got put in that information because realtors already provide that to prospective home buyers. And part of it is alerting people in the counties where there are radon problems that they need to be aware of this. So like many states, Oregon currently requires homeowners to disclose any known radon test results at the time of sale. However, since a radon test is not required, many homeowners simply do not perform a test and they do not know if they have elevated levels to disclose. So this bill will help address this problem by giving the home buyer information about radon, and then the home buyer can determine if a test should be performed. There's no requirement in Senate Bill 1025 that a radon test is performed. And part of that, colleagues, we live in a high radon area. Many parts of my district are areas with high radon gas. We live in an older home, a 1924 bungalow. We did a short-term test for radon, and our levels came out acceptable. And then we did a long-term test, which takes six months to a year, and our levels were twice the recommended EPA exposure level. So part of it is it depends on the type of test, and the accuracy can vary. So that's one of the reasons that we didn't require specific testing in this bill, but said, you know, that's all available information. U.S. EPA, the Department of Human Services, has all that information available on their website. We want to make sure that people can get that information and then determine if they're going to do a test or not, and then, you know, mitigation. Now, that's for existing buildings. This bill does not require any mitigation for existing buildings. It will help decrease radon levels for future construction, and it's by putting it into the building codes, then you're doing it up front, and you don't have to go back and mitigate later. So you're going to hear from the home builders, from the realtors about this, and also I'm assuming building codes is sitting behind me and can further answer any questions that you have about that. So this bill came, as you heard, overwhelmingly out of the Senate. And there's no known opposition to this bill. I'm hoping that we can pass it through with a broad bipartisan support, as we did over in the Senate. And I think this will help us protect Oregonians from, as you will hear, a silent killer, basically, this radon gas. So with that, I'll hand it over to my esteemed colleague.
Thank you, Chair and members of the committee. I'm Senator Lori Moniz-Anderson. I represent Senate District 25, Gresham-Cap-Delwood Village and Fairview. I'm not going to add too much more. I just want you to know that we started a bill in 2009, and we didn't have enough collaboration with the realtors, the home builders, and the Lung Association, and that's why I'm just so thankful that Senator Dingfelder was able to take the ball after last session. We didn't have time to build the coalition and work with everyone, and as a public health nurse and knowing the story of Marlene McEwen from Sherwood, Oregon, which she is here, who lost her husband due to this terribly aggressive cancer, I will close my comments with that, because I think we have a compelling case, and I hope you look favorably upon this bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I appreciate your testimony and welcome you to the Consumer Protection Committee on the House side. It's a pleasure having you here on this bill. Very important issue. I've been following it for a while as well, since last session, so I appreciate that. Is there questions from the committee for the senators?
Do you want any?
You know, I have a question, but perhaps somebody else might be more apt to or able to answer it, and that is the in the bill, and you can punt if you wish. Okay. In the bill, it talks about making consumers aware about appropriate testing, and so that's the piece that sort of concerns me, that we make sure that people if they do get testing, that it's appropriate testing, so they don't come away with, as you described, a test that showed that you didn't have any radon and you did one that was obviously more appropriate, and it showed that you were twice levels. So I just want to make sure we're not giving consumers
And I appreciate that, Mr. Chair. And one of the things that we discussed with the real estate agency is that there's no need to reinvent the wheel here. There's a lot of very good information. As I mentioned, both U.S. EPA and our own Department of Human Services provides that. We didn't want the real estate agency, they're not experts on radon, we didn't want them to have to go out and create new information, but just point people to the accurate information. A lot of people just don't know about it or know where to go. And so certainly if somebody's thinking about buying a home in a high radon area, if it's part of the information they're getting on many other things that they need to know about as an informed consumer, this information is readily available. And so certainly you can ask the Realtors Association about that, but we worked to make sure that the language wouldn't be creating a burden on them to have to go out and create it. But it's already existing. It's there. It's readily available. I think in your packets you should have a page from the US EPA website. I had asked to make sure that that got to your offices, and also a page from the Department of Human Service website. So that is what the information will most likely point to.
Could be somewhere on my desk, I'm not sure. Representative Krieger.
Senator, was there a testimony about the cost of the test?
It's $25. Okay. Yeah, it's pretty low. And it's a pretty simple test. It's just that the short-term test is, the reality is that a long-term test is more accurate, but not everybody has a year to do that. And so the shorter-term test is more accurate. Again, I just want to be clear, this bill does not require testing. We had a lot of discussions about it, but it points people to the information. And there's also many contractors out there that do this for a living, and they are, again, listed on the websites, and there's a lot of information that needs to get out to consumers, because even, in my district where it's high radon areas, a lot of people don't know about it. So we're just trying to make sure that people know about it, number one, and then for new construction, it will be addressed in the building codes. And I'm sure there's lots of other people that have more detailed information that can talk about it. And I'd be happy to stick around for extra questions.
I just have one more for you. And, just because you're sitting there, I get to ask you questions. It's not often I get to ask the senator questions. But because I'm always going over there and just getting drilled with questions, it seems like. So the testing around the state, you've identified some areas in the state that have been identified as having radon and certain areas. It's my understanding that really hasn't been done statewide, so there's a lot of areas in the state that we may or may not know that there's radon present, or that there's likelihood of radon in certain parts of the state?
Well, what we've identified is where the US EPA and also through the state has identified certain counties where there is known high levels of radon. Doesn't mean in those other counties that aren't listed in the bill that there's absolutely no radon, but just because of the naturally occurring in soils, as I said, it's a breakdown of uranium, we know certain areas of the state have higher radon levels. And part of that's through the amount of testing, background testing that's been done. But it doesn't mean, it doesn't mean that the areas that are not called out in this bill absolutely doesn't have radon. So, if I was a prospective home buyer, I would probably test regardless. But I think the main thing is in the areas where we know it's a known, high radon area, and I can tell you in my district it's very highly concentrated. Even within my district, I have areas, neighborhoods that are high radon and neighborhoods that aren't. So it varies. It's very local variability, and that's one of the reasons that we just want to point people to a test and they can do the test themselves. And the other is that we don't want to say to somebody, and we're not, again, this bill does not require mitigation, but, there is a cost to mitigating existing buildings. I mean, we did it, and we just paid for it because the other cost that is not factored in is the cost of lung cancer. And so, obviously, we decided it was worth making that investment. It cost about $1,600 in our home to put in a mitigation system because we're breathing that air, 8-10 hours a day, whatever, when you're not at the workplace. So I think, again, a lot of it's just a right to know for people, consumer information, and what's the best way to get that out. And then also for new construction, there's a lot easier and less costly ways of mitigating through the construction process, and I'm sure you'll hear about that from the from DCBS and building codes.
Thank you. I appreciate your testimony.
Stick around if you have a couple more questions.
I appreciate you bringing this bill forward, too. It's really important.
Thank you.
Next up, Terry Lindsay, Brett Sherry, and Steve Tucker. Or if you don't want to come up all together and come up separately, that's fine, too. Welcome, and if you'd like to start out by identifying yourself for the record, please.
Chair Holvey and members of the committee, I am Terry Lindsay, Section Manager for Radiation Protection Services, Oregon Health Authority Public Health Division. I'm here to testify in support of Senate Bill 1025A. As already stated, of course, radon is the second leading cause of lung cancer for non-smokers, it's the leading cause of lung cancer. What this translates into from the Oregon Cancer Registry is about 2,500 lung cancer deaths are attributed to lung cancer each year, and of those, it's estimated about 10% of them are attributable to radon gas exposure. Requiring that radon-resistant construction techniques are used in building is important in terms of reducing radon in the future. And for Oregonians throughout the state, we also want to continue to monitor the radon levels across the state. As already was indicated, the number of counties that are in there, there is data on some of the other counties as well, and virtually all counties have high numbers individually. But the ones that are identified are the ones that are prevalent in terms of radon numbers. The information materials for radon being available through the realtors so that it's given out during real estate transactions will help to raise public awareness for radon. And from that, we're hoping that additional testing is done. We recommend that testing be done in every house in Oregon. You can have two houses side by side. One can be high, one can be low. And it can be for many different factors. The cost-benefit ratio of having this in new construction, it's much less costly to have radon built out of a house than it is to fix it as a mitigation after the house is constructed. And I think you'll hear more about that from other that are testifying. We also will support in terms of providing additional information from Oregon Health Authority, radiation protection, in terms of questions that come up for homeowners, and we take those calls all the time in terms of from the public. So I'm available to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you. If you'd like to go ahead and give your testimony, that'd be great.
Sure. My name is Steve Tucker. I'm the owner, president of Cascade Radon, office in Portland. I have been certified with the EPA for testing and mitigation for over 20 years. I've been a licensed building contractor for 30 years plus. I'm EPA listed currently as a radon-resistant new construction contractor. I have served with the EPA's as a technical assistant for the EPA's Western Regional Training Center, and I helped establish California's radon. I've served on an advisory board to establish California's codes towards radon. I want to just briefly touch on testing, since I am involved in testing as well. Just as a couple of examples of what was talked about earlier, it can vary from house to house. Good example, just the other day, we put a system in Portland, retrofitting to an existing house. The neighbor came over, "What are you doing?" We told him what we were doing. He said, "Why won't we put in my house?" I said, "Well, show me the test results." He said, "Well, I've never done any testing. Just put one in. My neighbor's got it, and I want it." And I said, "Well, no, I won't do that." And so we loaned him one of our monitors. He had very low radon levels. there's a good case in point. Another case in point, there's a website you can go to that's right on by zip code in Oregon. And not too long ago, several years ago, one of the zip codes out towards Gresham showed very little low potential for radon if you looked at it. But, of course, if you're into reading statistics, which I'm not great at, but if you looked over how many tests had been done, how many data points there were for that zip code, is very low, as opposed to certain other areas. So it kind of had a snowball effect as far as testing and people being aware of it. A fellow happened to test his house on a whim, and at the time, I believe he had the highest levels so far found in Portland. It's pretty darn close to that. So it does vary from place to place, and from what I've heard and what I understand is the jury's still out as far as what other counties might have areas that are potentially prone to elevated levels. But I can speak professionally to this particular bill as far as a radon-resistant construction. I've been involved with that for years, and as far as exactly what's involved with it, what the costs are, and the simplicity of it. Thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate your testimony. Questions? I have one question. Does the Oregon Public Health Division, do we know if do we have like an inventory of our own public buildings? How about this building? Does it have radon in it?
Chair Hobley, we do not have that data in terms of for every building in Oregon, for public buildings in Oregon. There's a lot of school testing that was done in the early 90s, but not all public buildings were tested. So a lot of the data, the test data that the zip code data is on our website is available from, was testing that was done in the early 90s, sponsored through EPA, and that data was put together by the Portland State University with the geologists there, and the data was consolidated into zip codes. Some zip codes only have a couple of radon tests, so as was indicated earlier, you can't really say that that's high or low. There's not enough test data for it.
So yeah, I understand that. I was just wondering where we were at the end of the in the inventory process of public buildings specifically, because a lot of them are pretty old. So,
Chair Hopley, one other thing related to, even if a radon test was done 10 years ago, it's very important that a test be done again. What happens with structures is they end up settling and you end up with cracks in them, or they change the heating and air conditioning systems in them, so the radon levels can change along with that.
Thank you. Appreciate that update.
If I may, just towards the real estate end of things, since we do a lot of, there is a lot of retrofit systems put in existing structures, one thing that's often heard from homeowners is, why didn't my realtor tell me about this? And so, and I believe the pamphlet that the EPA that you were talking about earlier is called the Home Buyer and Seller's Guide to Radon.
Right.
It's specifically pointed towards realtors.
I bet a lot of them didn't know. So I appreciate your testimony. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Was there somebody else I called up that wanted to testify? Or
apologize, it was me. It's Brett Sherry. I'm the radon coordinator for the state of Oregon, and I mistakenly signed in thinking it was a sign-in sheet.
Oh,
sorry about that.
So you didn't want to talk. I guess we'll let you off the hook. Next up, Marlene McEwen and Phil Donovan.
If you want to identify yourself and go ahead, whoever wants to start first.
Is Chair Holby coming back?
I'm taking his place at this time.
I didn't know if I'm going to wait for him or not. Okay. I am Marlene McEwen. This is my late husband, Bob McEwen. In July of 2003, July 24th, actually, my husband was diagnosed with lung cancer as a non-smoker. He came home from his diagnosis wondering why this had happened to him, since he had never smoked and never been around any kind of extended exposure to secondhand smoke. He went on the internet, which can be a valuable tool and it can be a very destructive tool as well, and found out that radon is the leading cause of lung cancer among non-smokers. So he was actually a building contractor at the time, and we sought out a test, which was not readily available, and we did find one. We mitigated our home after learning that our test, which I want you to remember that 4 picocuries per liter is the action level with the EPA. Our house tested at 57.2. I had called the EPA before we had mailed in our test and told them that my husband had been diagnosed with lung cancer and we thought it was radon-related. We wanted to test. They asked me where I lived. I told them we lived in Lake Oswego. They told me don't even bother to test. Lake Oswego had an average radon level per their estimations at 1.8. Had we not tested, my home would not be safe. We went ahead and mailed the test in, got the test back, called them up and said, our radon level is 57.2. They said, that can't be. Retest. So we retested. The test came back at 57.2. Now, the test we did was a short-term test, but it was also done in the wintertime. And Chair Holvey, you were speaking earlier about how the test can fluctuate. And what I've learned over the last over 5 years since my husband passed away is that the wintertime is the best time to test. It's when the windows are closed and the doors are closed and there's very little movement. If the doors are open and the windows are open in the area where the test kit actually sits for 3 days for a short-term test, it can stir up the air and it can change the levels. So I think part of the issue is that the testing has to be done consistently in an undisturbed area in the lowest portion of your home, and there are some other regulations for that and some other things that you need to do as well to make sure that it's away from walls and doors, et cetera. At any rate, Bob underwent intensive chemotherapy and radiation. By the time he was diagnosed, it had been in his system, the doctors estimated, for 2 years. He had a tumor in the right lower lobe of his lung. CAT scans and MRI showed that it had metastasized to his breastbone, the middle of his back, his hips, and his entire lymph system. Within 9 months, it went into his brain. He started losing his faculties, the ability to speak, the ability to walk. He was 48 years old when he was diagnosed. A month after it went into his brain, it went into the lining of his brain. Several months later, he passed away at the age of 49. He left myself 4 children and 1 grandchild. I now have 6 grandchildren, 5 of which Bob has never seen, and they have never seen their grandfather. Bob died far too young. It took away a fabulous future of my husband, and also myself, having planned to have been with this man for the rest of my life. There's a couple of facts that I want to read to you that I think are staggering. I'm sure that you have heard a lot of facts about radon. It is the second leading cause of cancer among people in general, and it is the first leading cause among people who have not smoked. And there's two facts that I have dug up in my research that I think are applicable to this particular situation. A family whose home has radon levels of 4 picocuries per liter is exposed to approximately 35 times as much radiation as the Nuclear Regulatory Commission would allow if that family were standing next to the fence of a radioactive waste site. These are EPA standards. And the second one, which I think is even more tragic, is an elementary school child that spends 8 hours per day and 180 days per year in a classroom with 4 picocuries of radon will receive nearly 10 times as much radiation as the Nuclear Regulatory Commission allows at the edge of the nuclear power plant. Also, one other side note is the World Health Organization has just lowered the standard for, it's not really safe, it's mitigation levels, from 4 picocuries to 2.7. So generally worldwide, there is a call for this kind of legislation. And I certainly hope that in honor of my late husband, and my experience with this particular situation, that you find it in your hearts to support this bill. Thank you. I'll leave that up so you guys can look at it.
Thank you. I appreciate your testimony, and, you know, it is disturbing, I know, to listen to you, and probably disturbing for you to sit there and recount this, but I applaud you for your advocacy in trying to do something about this, because I think without you coming to this building, this bill probably wouldn't be as well known as it is, and so I appreciate you standing up and going forward with this to try to do something for the benefit of a lot of people. So thank you very much.
Thank you. It's my honor.
Chair Holvey, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Phil Donovan. I'm here on behalf of the American Lung Association of Oregon in support of Senate Bill 1025. I'll just take a quick moment to point out that Marlene not only comes down to the state capitol to meet with you, but she participates in public forums and recounts her story in communities around the state. So she's sharing it not only with you, but with real Oregonians every day. So there's been, I've had the opportunity to talk with many of you already about this legislation, and there's not a lot to add after Marlene's testimony, but I do want to go on the record and point out that on behalf of the Lung Association, this is the second leading cause of lung cancer in the United States. It can be easily prevented, and this legislation puts us on that course to make that correction. It's been thoughtfully put together with a group of stakeholders to make sure that it's done correctly, and so we're in strong support of this legislation. We urge your prompt action. Thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate your testimony. Seeing any other questions, thank you so much for being here today and bringing this forward and talking to me last session about it, and your stick-to-itiveness, I think, will pay off.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next up, I have Sean Jillians and Scott Berry. Welcome to the Consumer Protection Committee, and if you'd identify yourself for the record.
Good afternoon. Scott Berry on behalf of the Oregon Home Builders. I don't have a lot to talk about this afternoon. We've spent quite a bit of time on this issue last session, and again this session in the Senate, and I think have ended up with a piece of legislation that's going to be helpful for us in terms of new construction and for getting some information out to those who are living in houses that currently may have this this problem. So I'm really here to answer any questions, and I'm happy to do that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Sean Jillians representing the Oregon Association of Realtors. I appreciate the work that Senator Dingfelter put in with all the stakeholders during the interim on this bill. We do stand ready to work with the real estate agency. Senator Dingfelter mentioned the letter that Commissioner Bentley put in on the Senate side that they were ready to work on this issue. Section 3 specifically directs them to work with public and private entities. That's directed at our association, Mr. Chair. We do work collaboratively with them on the buyer's advisory, which is a document that brings forth a lot of issues that potential buyers should consider when they're ready to purchase a home. They range from well testing to wood stoves to mold to the need for home inspections, and that's a process that we put together jointly, and so that's where we plan to work with the agency to work on that. We encourage all our members to give that out to potential buyers. It's available on the real estate agency's website. It's available on our website, so it's really a document that we encourage everyone to use. The center also mentioned that the real estate agency is not going to be the experts on that. Neither are our members, but we do want to get the right information of where they can get that information. And that's really what the buyer's advisory does. It has a lot of links into it for more information. It gives brief snapshots and says, to get the true picture, you need to go to these particular places, and the Oregon Health Authority would be who we would see for that. With that, Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. I don't know that I have any specific questions of you, but I do have a comment, because I did meet with the Building Codes Division, and talked about some things, and this would be of interest to Senator Dingfelder, because we have come a long way in this state on our on saving energy and our energy codes, and sometimes we don't look at buildings holistically, and we have sealed them up so tight sometimes that we have more propensity for mold and perhaps radon because of how tight we're sealing up homes that back in the old days used to breathe quite a bit more than they do today. And it's become a challenge, of looking at our building structures holistically and looking at these as systems that do provide a healthy environment. And so there's trade-offs sometimes that I think that we perhaps haven't really examined before when we're looking at, an energy code in a particular silo and a building code over here and not really considering the health impacts that these codes may have on our environments. So I just throw that out there because it's been an issue I've been concerned about for a long time, actually, with mold specifically. And now radon becomes another one that perhaps we need to take a second look at some of the, or take a more cautious look at some of the codes we develop. But I appreciate your input. Other questions? Representative Wingard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sean, this would seem a natural fit for the home inspection process that occurs when people are selling their home. What is the problem with having the home inspector as part of that process test for radon in a home before it's changing hands?
Mr. Chair, Representative Wingard, I think there's several issues that come up with that. One, the home inspector is not an expert in this particular process, and so it would be a separate test. I think the second issue is one, though, that I've raised with Senator Dingfelder, which is to truly have an accurate test, you should have a six-month or year-long test. And so if you have that parameter, it's difficult on the closing of a house to have that test that lasts that length of time.
Thank you.
Thank you. Would you like to...
Senator Dingfelder,
for the record,
is
again,
that it's already required if there is known levels of radon for it to be disclosed. So if a test has already been done and there are test results available, it is required as part of the disclosure statements that has to be. It's already in state statute that would have to be disclosed. But I appreciate the question that Representative Wingard raised, the issue around the length of the test. It can't be done instantaneously.
Mm-hmm.
So, we may come up with a new testing method that's accurate on a very short-term basis, and I'd be happy to come back and revisit that, as I know the realtors would as well.
Be happy to have that discussion, Senator.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Smith.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. The relatively moving testimony that we heard just recently talked about a three-day test, and they did it twice. Does that test have a high error rate? Because 3 days is different than 6 months to a year.
Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, I don't purport to be an expert in radon, but I, in preparation for this bill, I did read the 114-page World Health Organization manual. Yeah. And what they say on that is that radon levels fluctuate throughout the year.
Yeah.
And so for a short test, and I think Senator Dingfelder is actually a case of this, originally it came up fine because at a certain point of year, you might be fine.
Yeah.
At another point in the year, you might have increased levels. And so you truly need that long snapshot to get an idea of what's actually in your home.
And not everybody sells their house in the winter. Thanks, Mr. Chair.
No.
Yeah. I'm just kind of curious where we buy these testing kits. So. Oh, would you like to come forward and address that? And if you'd re-identify yourself, please.
Chair Holby, my name is Terry Lindsay, Radiation Protection Services Section Manager. In terms of a couple issues there, the repeating of the test during the heating season is an accurate method in terms of short term. The most accurate is the long-term test, as is already indicated. But it's important that the test be done during the heating season when the house is closed up. That's going to concentrate the radon. When you have the windows open and the home vented in terms of on the substructure, you're going to deplete the radon levels kind of naturally. We tend to close all that up during the wintertime, and that's when the concentration is going to be, you know, in the home and cause problems with our children and all of us. So to answer the question, it's most accurate during the heating season. And in terms of getting the test, you can go on to our website, and there is a link to the Lung Association. Actually, you can get test kits there for like $15. Or you can also get them at local hardware stores and that sort of thing. So it is a low-cost test to do the short term, and that's a good indicator of whether or not you might have a radon problem. You should do the long-term test if you aren't in the middle of a radon or a real estate transaction, you have to move tomorrow type thing. But that can also be handled in terms of making that part of the disclosures and the testing for that. If the information is given to the homeowner, even after they make the transaction, they can do the radon test and the mitigation for that. I think testimony has already been given. The averages are around $800 to $2,500 for doing a mitigation of an existing structure.
Thank you.
I have a question of Mr. Lindsay. May I?
Certainly.
Thank
Representative Tomei.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Lindsay, are these tests required in schools?
Representative Hovey and Representative Tomei, the radon tests are not required in schools. However, most of the schools in Oregon have done testing across the state. It is not required. Portland District, all 100 schools were tested. A lot of the tests were done about 10 years ago. So, again, structures settle. They should be retested over time.
Has the Capitol been tested?
Yeah, I asked that previously.
Not as far as I know.
I'm trying to get an answer.
And that's something that we would be happy to help with that process in terms of testing of public buildings.
I think there should be a follow-up on that, Mr. Chair.
Certainly, I might ask a few questions about it. But, you know, all our public buildings where people work think about it, all the buildings in the state, whether they're public or private, may have an interest in knowing what kind of radon levels they have. Well, I really appreciate your testimony, and I appreciate Senator Dingfelder making herself available and sitting through this. A great topic, and Arlene McEwen as well. Thank you for your advocacy on this subject matter and seeing this bill to the legislature and bringing it to our attention. Thank you very much. With that, I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 1025A and open a work session on Senate Bill 1025A. A motion. We have no amendments to the bill. Fiscals and revenue statements have already been done on the Senate side, so I assume we're good to move this to the floor.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Riley.
I move Senate Bill 1025A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Riley moves Senate Bill 1025A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Hearing none. Cindy, would you give us a roll call vote, please?
Aye.
Representative Smith? Aye. Representative May?
Aye.
Representative Wingert?
Aye.
Vice Chair Gilliam?
Aye.
Vice Chair
Riley?
Aye.
Chair Holby? Sorry. Senate Bill 1025A, having received the required votes, is moved to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Carrier.
Mr. Chair? I'd be honored to carry the bill on the floor.
Representative Wingard volunteers to carry the bill.
Thank you.
With that, I'll close the work session in case I didn't on Senate Bill 1025A. And open a public. I'm going to take a recess for a few, about 3 minutes, if that satisfies everybody. I'd like to bring the House Committee on Consumer Protection and Government Accountability back into order, and thank you for your patience. Next up, we are going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 993. Patrick, would you please give us a brief summary of the bill?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 993 relocates and reorganizes provisions in statute relating to payday and title lenders that prescribe regulations for payday and title lenders, require payday and title lenders to be licensed to conduct business in Oregon, give director of DCBS rulemaking authority over licensee activity, that give the director authority to investigate licensee compliance with license requirements, that set allowable rates of interest for payday and title loans, that allow the director to assess civil penalties for violation of provisions. This measure has an emergency clause. It would take effect upon passage. The Senate vote was 27-0. There is no revenue impact and just minimal fiscal impact, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And I think I'll call up Paul Cosgrove. I did want to recognize the students from Willamette University and one back there that I recognize, actually, that I sort of skipped over. And welcome to you over here from across the street. I'm glad that Willamette University comes over and watches what we do once in a while. With that, Mr. Cosgrove, if you'd introduce yourself for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Paul Cosgrove, representing Oregon Financial Services Association, and the bill was drafted by Senator Morris at our request. Although the summary talks about establishing requirements for payday and title lenders, I'd like to start out with one very important thing. Notwithstanding that when you look at the bill, you see a lot of black, bold language, there is nothing in this bill that isn't current law. It is a recodification and reorganization of current law, but it neither adds nor subtracts nor in any way changes the regulations either of payday and title lenders or of consumer finance companies, which are the members of my association. The reason the bill is being brought before you is that it requires just a little bit of history. Consumer finance companies in Oregon have been in business since the 30s. My association, in fact, was organized in the 1930s, so they've been around a long time. And some of them are chains from out of state. Most of them are small family-owned businesses, but they do personal loans. They help people finance cars. Some of them do real estate loans. And they're all over the state, from Baker City to Eugene and Springfield to Milwaukee and Oak Grove. They're one in each of those towns, and well as Portland and other cities. In the 90s, when payday and title lenders started coming into the states, there really wasn't a regulatory scheme for them. And they started to apply for consumer finance licenses. And as that process started and developed, pretty soon you as a legislative body and the Department of Consumer and Business Services under their regulatory authority started to draft specific provisions and requirements for payday and title lenders, which were different from consumer finance companies because we have different kinds of business models. We do different kinds of things. And what we have ended up with now is one set of statutes that has a mixture of all of those provisions together. What this bill does and why we think it's important to do it is a matter of clarity and clean legislative drafting is it takes all of the provisions of payday and title lending regulation from the licensure application to what you can do as when you make loans to how you treat your customers to what happens if you don't and puts them in one organized section, leaving the old Chapter 725, which deals with consumer finance companies, with all those same kinds of provisions over here. But I want to just reassure you that it does not change in any way the regulation, requirements, authority, or powers of any of those kinds of lenders. It is a recodification, a reorganization. With that, I would be happy to answer any questions.
Questions from the committee? Mr. Cosgrove, as you know, I was a little reluctant to go down this road with this particular bill because I put so much effort into getting these statutes into law and made me very nervous to see something so large and of an undertaking coming forward in a special session. It gave me a great pause, and I actually stayed up last night looking at it for a while. And I appreciate the reason that you want to do this. I was just trying to justify it for myself, much less as it being an exercise in that doesn't really change any law, but I understand your reasoning and trying to simplify the law, and have gone over a lot of it with legislative counsel, and it does look like it's an improvement to the statutes, and so I'm inclined to agree with this bill moving forward. It seems like a good exercise, and I hate to waste the time of legislative counsel, put in some time on this and made it a better statute. And so I appreciate that to some degree, but I would like to commend you for your perseverance on this, and appreciate your dialogue on this issue, and trust that we can definitely have a discourse on this subject matter if something should come up that did get changed inadvertently in the future. That would be my only request, that if something does appear that has changed the statutes of any substance, that we get a chance to review that, because it is a pretty big undertaking and takes a lot of review. So I trust the agency people that is going to testify on it next to some degree, and yourself and legislative counsel that have done a good job on this. So. Thank you very much, anyway.
And if I may just add one thing, we actually had an attempt to do this in the last regular session. It came sort of toward the end of the session as an amendment to the bill, and Mr. Chair, you may recall the history of the...
I do quite well.
...fits and starts of all that, and we have spent a lot of time diligently during the interim at the request of the Senate Chair, who wasn't comfortable moving forward in May of last year, to in fact make sure that this does not change the substance of the regulation or responsibilities of these lenders. So we appreciate your help and the Senate Chair's help, and of course the department, whose staff has looked over all of the drafts and made careful review and a few suggested changes that Legislative Council adopted to make sure of that. So I appreciate
Thank
it.
You.
Thank you.
And I'd just like to call up David Tapman now. Welcome to the committee this session. I think it's the first time you've been before us for a while.
Mr. Chair, it is. Thank you so much. For the record, my name is David Tapman, Division Administrator for the Division of Finance and Corporate Securities. That's a part of the Department of Consumer and Business Services. And as you heard from Mr. Cosgrove, our agency, the division, is responsible for the oversight of both consumer finance lenders, traditional consumer finance lenders, as well as payday and title lenders. You're receiving my short testimony there. I'm not going to reiterate it other than to basically say, Mr. Chair, we obviously shared the same concerns that you just raised with Mr. Cosgrove. It was a large change. I personally went over it line by line, literally numbered line by numbered line, and did a comparison with the current law and the proposed law. There were about seven places where we had concerns early last summer. We talked with Mr. Cosgrove. Mr. Cosgrove and our agency spent a fair amount of time talking about those changes. We asked for certain modifications. Those modifications were incorporated in the draft of this bill. We think that there is not a substantive change in terms of the way that payday lenders and title lenders are regulated by this law. We think that substantially it's the same. I can't give you a sworn guarantee, but as far as I can tell, based on my analysis and the analysis of some of my staff and Mr. Cosgrove's analysis, this should crosswalk into the same level and same type of substantive type of regulation. So I'm comfortable, and that's why I'm prepared to provide the department's support for this concept. We think it keeps things as it is. Mr. Cosgrove indicated it provides for clarity. There's no question that you will see that modern language has been incorporated into the new language and gotten away from language that was adopted sometime in the 50s, and so I think it does read more clearly. And so with that we support the concept. We appreciate the efforts of Mr. Cosgrove and Legislative Council to make this happen, and I stand ready to answer any questions.
I appreciate your diligence in looking at that because of my, you know, just concern over taking something on this big. But I know that a lot some folks have been working on this for quite some time, and so it gives me some comfort to hear you say that on the record as well. I know that there were some deletions in here, but I, you know, deletions of chapters, but I assume that's they were deleted because they were basically being moved somewhere else.
Mr. Chair, that's correct. Those deletions will appear in the new law, maybe slightly rewritten, and in a couple of places they were combined, but the substantive effect is the same.
Thank you. Representative Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a comment. I really applaud this effort. That particular section had gotten really messy, and I think anytime we can clean up the ORS or any other part of our law and make it easier to read for anybody who wants to look at it, the better off we are. So I applaud you doing this, and I really appreciate it.
Thank you. I don't believe anybody else have questions for Mr. Tapman. I trust that, you know, if I start seeing a proliferation of payday lending institutions being built in my neighborhood, I might be calling you.
Well, after the last hearing, I guess you'd want to check the ground first. But, yes, Chair, I'd be happy to take any calls.
All right. Thank you. With that, I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 993 and open a work session on Senate Bill 993.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Riley.
I move Senate Bill 993 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Riley moves Senate Bill 993 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Seeing none. Cindy, would you like to give us a roll call vote, please?
Commitment to recodification.
Representative Krieger?
Aye.
Representative Matthews?
Aye.
Representative Smith?
Aye.
Representative
Knight?
Aye.
Representative
Winger? Aye. Representative Winger?
Aye.
Vice Chair Gilliam?
Aye.
Vice Chair Riley?
Aye.
Chair Holby?
Aye. Senate Bill 993, having received the necessary votes, has passed the floor with a due pass recommendation. And before I sign this bill, I'm not sure who on this committee hasn't carried a bill for the committee.
I haven't, Mr. Chair, if you want me to carry this bill. It's a big bill, but I'll carry it for you.
Would you?
I will.
Okay. He's a big guy.
Can I request that Representative Matthews read it line by line into the record?
On behalf of Representative Matthews, will carry the bill on the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
So with that, I'll close the work session on Senate Bill 993. Committee, next week, do we have the, are we moving forward with that?
At the committee chair's discretion.
Okay.
There's a motion script that actually motions, one to request the draft that we've already gotten,
mm-hmm.
just like we did previously.
I'm going to open a work session for the purpose of introduction of committee measures. Representative Riley.
Mr. Chair, I move that the committee request that Legislative Council prepare a draft for a House resolution to address the proposed merger of Comcast and NBC Universal.
Representative Riley moves that the committee request the Legislative Council prepare a draft for a House resolution to address the proposed merger of Comcast and NBC Universal. Is there any discussion?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
I'll say this.
Mr. Hearing Chair. None?
No, there's some.
Oh, did I hear some?
Question, Mr. Chair?
Representative Wingard.
Is it the chair's expectation that there's enough time left in the special session to pass this measure?
I believe that it's probably possible, yes.
Follow-up question, Mr. Chair?
Follow-up.
Wouldn't it need to pass out of this committee by tomorrow in order didn't we already finish with bills originating in the House? I guess I'm confused as to how it could actually get passed.
Not necessarily. Well, it may not go to this committee. We're just introducing the bill.
Mr. Chair?
Representative,
are you going to plan to have a vote on your motion?
Well,
I really have strong objection. I have some things that even today the bill on the floor about the Adjutant General, and I was told there was no time to do anything in the session.
Mm-hmm.
I have a real problem with this bill. Beside the fact that I have stock in Comcast, I think it's inappropriate to ask our delegation to get in the middle of a merger that's in federal court, that's being litigated. I think it makes a mockery of this chamber. That's personal opinion, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Krieger.
You just about said everything that I could say, but you know, I'm looking at the back. Be it resolved. And it goes on down to the back page. If this is the best and all we've got to do before we get out of this building, to me it's amazing. I haven't seen anything like this since I've been here in 10 years.
Thank you. Any other discussion? Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, you have brought bills forward that I do not like and I disagree with, but you have always brought them forth with a foundation in careful study, in passion, in interest, and I respect that. I'm not seeing that here. And I would urge you at this date and in this atmosphere to pass on this one.
Senator Smith.
So this, we're not voting on this. We're just voting to create it, make it a bill?
Okay. That's correct.
So
this doesn't mean that you support or oppose the bill. It's just simply to allow it to be drafted and that's about it.
I don't get the Blazers at my house, and I'd like to. And if there are any other vehicles that make it more likely that I get the Blazers at my house, I would like it. I'll be an aye vote on this motion.
Thank you. And Patrick, would you like to clarify?
Mr. Chair, the motion before us would be, in order to introduce this as a committee measure, the motion before us is the first of two motions necessary. This motion that Representative Riley made is to request that Legislative Council draft an LC draft to do that. You can see they've already done that. Well, this is one of those occasions where we're retroactively asking for approval to have Legislative Council draft something, but it's required by the rules that we use. And so this motion would be to request that they draft something that they've already drafted. So I'm uncertain what would happen were this motion to fail. But it's of course
a racist.
but of course that's neither here nor there.
Well, certainly I know there's been a lot of discussion about this that has come to me about the access of programming that is currently available around sports events across the state of Oregon, and it has been a concern of many who do not have access to sports programming. And the concern that has been raised now is with this new merger that access to programming across the state will decrease, which is, I think, the impetus for this draft coming forward is a discussion on that point. And Representative Smith.
Hey, let me just say, I don't mean to be just flip and silly. At first blush, it sort of struck me as that. But let me just say, people in my district, they care a lot more about what they can get on TV than a lot of other things we do in this building. And that may be sort of, you know, too bad, but you know, I'm not convinced that figuring out how we can engage in federal issues is the smartest or dumbest thing we can do, but I'm at least willing to see what happens if we make it a bill.
Mr. Chair. Thank you. Representative Ware?
Let me just try to make the opposite argument for the record. Because of the high-profile nature of this topic, it has a high likelihood of being one of the very few things that will be the focus of a great deal of press attention as to what this legislature took up and considered during its 30 days in session. And I would just encourage the chair and all of my colleagues who are inclined to support this that there are a lot of people in Oregon hurting many of them unemployed. We've had a contentious tax battle. We have severe budget issues are coming, and I think the people of Oregon want very much to feel like their legislature and legislators are engaged like a laser beam on the economy and jobs. And I'm afraid that as this moves, it will be all really that will be talked about over the next week, and it will garner a lot of attention. And I believe we will come to regret this because a lot of ridicule will follow as a result of it as well.
And certainly I appreciate that. I certainly think a lot of, there are a lot of people that feel this is an important issue of access to programming. And with that, we are this is not actually voting on this bill or bringing it to the floor at this point. We're just asking that it be drafted and next be introduced as a committee measure for conversation.
Mr. Chair, just a point of clarification, if I can. I understand that
Representative Matthews.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. I understand, but the comment that I heard was that if there wouldn't be time if we didn't hear this tomorrow, which we're not in committee tomorrow, and your response back was may not be our committee. So why is it this committee then going to vote forward and put us out there on the line to say we're going to move this forward if it's going to go to another committee? Why would we be in that position when really, quite honestly, this hasn't been an issue of discussion with me until I testified on a bill down the hall in the Senate committee. But when I came in and I read this, I thought, where did this come from? The timeliness of the Marcus Camby trade certainly makes me believe we're going to make the playoffs. But I don't know if that's truly what, and I hate to make light of it, but I tend to do agree with the Representative Wingard. This is one of those where, what are we getting into? And if it's not going to be before this committee, then why would this committee be saying, sure, let's send it down to LC? It just seems to me like it would be appropriate for the committee that's going to hear it to be the ones to address whether or not they want to hear it.
And certainly, there's measures that come and the committees are asked to introduce legislative concepts that are totally unrelated to their committees. And whether this committee would have approval to hear the bill later on is up to the speaker at that point. And he may or may not give us that approval. He may or may not give approval to have it to go further and be have an actual public hearing on it. I do not know that. So I was just going forward with a normal course, as that we do usually allow committees to introduce measures and introduce bills into the floor for discussion. And if we're going to start limiting our ability to do that selectively, I think that's also a dangerous precedent to make. Certainly, if that could have some ramifications, I guess, for many people who may want to have a bill introduced and hear things if we're going to start disallowing that to happen. So that's my particular point on that.
Wow.
Any other discussion? And again, the motion is simply to allow legislative council to draft this LC, and that we will be following up with a motion to have it introduced, and we'll see that. It seems there is an objection to it, so I'll call for a roll call vote. Cindy.
Representative Krieger?
No.
Representative Matthews?
No.
Representative Smith?
Aye.
Representative
May? Aye.
Representative Wingert?
No.
Vice Chair Gilliam?
No.
Vice Chair Riley?
Aye.
Chair Holby?
Aye. The motion has failed. So, Patrick, at that point, I believe I'm not able to move that bill forward for introduction.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. So with that, I will close the work session, and we will committee next week. We do have a informational meeting scheduled. Patrick, would you like to give us a little preview of what that might be?
Yes, Mr. Chair. We have informational meetings scheduled for Monday and Wednesday. On Monday, we're going to take up a couple topics that were related to a discussion we had on Senate Bill, on House Bill 3614. We're going to have a briefing on the activities of the governor's reset cabinet on the task force that was created by Representative Nathanson's bill dealing with cost-efficient government, and on the DHS transformation project. And then that'll be half of Monday's meeting. The other half will be dealing with transparency and public contracting.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. So that's our agenda for Monday, committee, and I think it goes in line with one of the topics we wanted to work on during the interim. That we did discuss with Representative Thatcher's bill. And so I am very serious about going forward with that discussion, and hope you're able to attend on Monday. With that, I will adjourn the House Committee on Consumer Protection and Government Accountability.